Let's put a song so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song's Second Chance Theater, where we recover a topic but with a new guest. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a friend, bestie of the pod. I don't know how to classify our relationship yet. He is a fellow podcaster on the Beards and Sundries podcast. It's Jay Rowdybush, everyone! Woo!
Hello!
Hi, Jay! I think you're like a friend off camera, off recording, because we've talked a lot. But on camera, you've only done, what, like 3 or 4 episodes at this point?
Four? I think I've only done 2, maybe.
No, you did.
I guess it's within that commercial.
You did. Let's see. Let's run through it. Let's see how well I remember.
Hello, Dolly.
You did Hello, Dolly. You did season 2 of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
That's
which
right.
2 episodes, but I'm only counting the topic as 1.
Yeah.
And then, did you do another one, or is this your third one?
I think that was only. I think this is my 3rd one, and then I did the little commercial when Joe and Anthony was on from the podcast.
Yes. But, like, you know, we have a group chat with those other 2 idiots that you do a podcast with, so.
Yeah, and I flew across the nation and visited you for an hour at a coffee shop, so.
Yes, so now I have to find my way, stumble my way to Oklahoma, I guess, to.
Oh, yeah, it's so worth it.
I'm going to get a cowboy, for fuck's sake. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Today we're here to recover the 1954, really think this is a Christmas movie, but we can get into it. White Christmas. Previously, we did it as episode number 87 with the guest Sierra Ryan. It was her first episode on the podcast. It was also my first episode with a special guest, and this is our first episode of Second Chance Month. Wow. So I'm doing a whole month dedicated to Second Chance Theater episodes, everyone.
Wow.
And Jay is the first person on Second Chance Month with White Christmas. So
I popped the Second Chance cherry.
Yeah, you did. So why did you want to talk about White Christmas?
Oh, I don't know. It's so funny. I actually did not like the movie for years. I was like, this isn't Christmas related, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what happened. But 1 year, I was like, wait a minute, you really need to put yourself in the era that this film was made. This is post-World War II, and there's all these soldiers that they felt so in charge of life and so useful during the war. And then after the war, they kind of got slumped off a little bit.
Yeah, that's really like the general.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, I want to use character names. Wallace and Davis. I feel like they're rising.
They're doing fine, yes.
While the general is realizing that he doesn't really have a life post-war, post-wartime.
Exactly. And so I started kind of switching my thinking into going, this was speaking to a lot more than upfront what the movie shows. So then I really enjoyed it a lot. Now I think I watch it multiple times a year because it's almost like I have the nostalgia even though I wasn't alive in 1954.
So this isn't a Christmas movie by any means. I'm going to make that argument right now, even though I did it as a Christmas movie or during the holiday season. But watching it this time, I'm like, really, this isn't. Christmas is so secondary. It's just the time of year that it is. It's not like it's not like a Hallmark movie or like a Rankin and Bass where they are gonna do Christmas. It's Christmas, you know. This is just like them making a show.
And it's almost like they're like, I'm gonna make a movie around this song. And then they wrote the movie, and at the end they're like, oh shit, there's like no Christmas in here. And so then they're like, well, we'll make it kind of a Christmas ending. And you're like, and it's this huge show of Christmas.
Everyone's in red and white at the end, and it's snowing, and they're singing White Christmas, which wasn't written for this movie. It was written for another movie about a decade earlier.
And I know Sierra said this in the first episode, but she's right. Vero and Rosemary were in gorgeous outfits.
Oh,
gorgeous, gorgeous outfits.
Gorgeous. Yeah, listening to that episode, I was like, we really just talk about the show? Because once she said that she did the show, it was like, oh, we could do this. Because, I mean, I feel like nobody saw the stage version. So
I never saw the stage version at all.
Yeah. It's
I think that's what kind of made the episode interesting for me, was going, oh, yeah, there's a stage show.
Yeah, well, after that episode, Sierra was the one who told me that fact about the minstrel numbers.
Uh-huh.
And I now cannot unsee it.
Yeah, the day I figured that out, it's kind of like, oh.
See, here's the thing. And I did message Sierra right before we recorded just to talk about it. And this is what I said to her. So I'm watching White Christmas because somebody chose it for a second chance. And I feel like the costume designer is the only one who doubled down on the racism in the minstrel sequence. I think for the longest time, before I knew they were supposed to be watermelons, I justified it as Christmas colors, red and green. Now I'm angry.
Same. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yes, they're pink, but you're like, it's like Christmas. It's red. And the guy, the Vera Ellen's partner is in a lighter shade of green than everyone else. No, they're watermelons.
Yeah. The time I read that fact, it was kind of just like, oh, I need to remember that I am watching a movie of its time. And wow, people are shitty sometimes.
But at least they had the forethought not to do it in blackface.
Yes. Yes. You know, the things you got to be thankful for.
That's something that I'm just like, that's not a lot to say, but like, that's a lot to say at the same time, where they could have just not done it.
And, you know, saying that, this movie was almost ahead of its time in multiple ways, because you guys also mentioned this in the first episode, but let's see, what was it? Rosemary Clooney's episode, or her name was...
Betty. Betty Haynes.
Betty! I was like, Judy was Vera, Betty was Rosemary.
Yeah.
Betty was the very, you know, I run the show lady, and you didn't have that back then. So now this show's thought ahead on women in power, and it's thought ahead on, let's dampen down the racism a smidge, you know, progressive.
Yeah, but they could have gotten rid of it. Like, they could have just said no.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, they could have made Betty a boss-ass bitch, but she was just kind of like a stern, hard-to-get-close-to woman. So, you know, small steps.
She's very guarded.
Guarded. That's a good word.
Yeah. I was watching this, and Emma, I started yelling at her so hard during the conflict that happens when... Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
That moment where she listens in at the wrong part of the conversation, but you're like, all you had to do was confront Bing Crosby about what you heard, and he could set you straight. But because you're a blabbermouth and never apologized for doing what you did, you suck.
It was that typical 1950s clumsy miscommunication that we always do. We can't bring up anything that may stir an issue, so we just come to this aggressive conclusion and create a bigger issue. Like that's what the whole show is, because first she causes it, and then Betty's character causes it, and Bing Crosby's character causes it, and I'm just like, ugh.
Well, it's a trope used even to this day, where you only hear half the conversation.
Yeah.
So like I was, for example, I was watching Ginny and Georgia not that long ago. It's a TV it's a show on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it's like season 2 was in 2021. So giving you time frame. There's a moment where a character is listening in on a private conversation, but like the door is open and she only hears half the story, and then she leaves upset, but then doesn't listen to the rest of it.
Uh-huh.
Unlike in this movie where Emma gets distracted from something and has to be pulled away from the conversation. But I'm like, it's a trope. Can we do something different? Can we
I mean,
mix it up a little bit?
Legally Blonde. We lean in and watch her getting sexually harassed by her teacher and walk away the moment before
she says no.
Elle is like, no. So
you're
I'm just
right.
Like, ah, typical.
You're right. Yours is a more relatable, but mine was, I was just pointing out that, like, even, you know, as of, 3 years ago, yikes. 2021 was 3 years ago. Even
it's
as,
scary.
Yeah. Even as 3 years ago, it's still a trope that we use. And it's like, I mean, I get it. In 54, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have other technology that, like, you know, you can send a text and be like, I'm sorry. Or, you know, can we talk or something like that. But like, I'm mad. I'm just so mad. I have no words for her. Let's move on.
It's annoying how I dislike that lady, but then I also have moments where I love her.
I love her. Well, you also love her because she was in Sister Act.
That's also very true.
Yeah. So we have that nostalgia as well. But did you think, though, that there was something we left out in the first chance that you wanted to expand upon or bring up?
You guys did so good at picking through it that I was just like, man, this made it a little harder to come back on. But
thank you.
I kind of view it as a film that's super underrated in a way. I think because it doesn't really have a Christmas feel, even though it's a Christmas movie, it was hard for me to get into it. And that's when I really like push people. I mean, I pushed one of my friends into being like, listen, here's why I liked it. And I described that understanding of that time frame of why that was such a big deal about the general and why he felt so bad and all. And now he's just like me. Every Christmas comes around, it's on Netflix. We binge it like every week almost. It feels like it's running in the background while we do stuff.
I know it's like a staple movie in December nowadays, where like they air it all the time on television for those of you that still have cable.
What's that?
I know, but it's for me, I grew up watching this movie and it has a nostalgia factor for me for that.
Yeah.
And it's gotten to the point where my mom, who was on the episode as you listened, she is like you. She listens, she watches it, puts it in the background any day.
Yeah.
She's probably watching it now. Like,
awesome. Go for it.
Because even the conflict is not really that much of a conflict.
No.
Like, yeah. Yes, there's war and explosions in the beginning, but like, that's not, it's a chill movie. It's a musical, obviously.
Yeah. And I hate to say this because I'm not on this side of politics, but I also feel like it's the movie that a lot of MAGA thoughts are involved around, because the movie is so hammed up 1950s, like,
this
we
is
have
the
a
great
problem,
America.
We fixed it, this is great, everything's great, things are great, all our problems are small.
This is the great America they wanted.
And I feel like it's that nostalgia that everyone wants to feel. I don't know how to explain it exactly.
No, I understand what you're putting down. It's like a very conservative thought process.
Yeah.
But
I think that's what they think will happen one day. And I'm like, no. Life is different now.
But I think for us, we're saying that we have more of a different connection to it.
Yes.
Because for me, it's more of like family, where
yeah.
We watched it as a family a lot. And for you, you're seeing more of like the general story.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're focusing more on that. And then, you know, Sisters happens and you're like, everyone shut up.
Yeah. If you talk right now, I will cut your tongue out.
Both times.
Yes. But don't you fuck around with that part of the movie. You can do it at that one scene where we're dancing. Anyways, no.
And then also, love you didn't do me right. Wait, what is it? Love you didn't do right by me. Like, by the time you get to that point, you're like, also, don't talk. Otherwise, you're going to lose a limb.
I will murder.
Basically, whenever Rosemary Clooney is singing, you're going to...
I
you,
will
everyone
murder
shut
if you sing during that song. That is like... I love that song, but I love Rosemary Clooney.
I have a question for you about that song, because
okay.
We didn't really talk. We did talk about it, but we didn't. I don't think this song needs dancers. How do you feel about it?
100%. I think the dancers actually take away a little bit from it.
I
Even
kind
though,
of...
yes, I know that one guy made it in West Side Story. I never remember his name. But
George
still.
Sakaris. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. But I just... I'm laughing because all these clubs, for example, it says, I'm singing at the Carousel Club. You go in and it's full of Carousel paraphernalia. I mean, it's just insane. It's so tacky. And then they like have this band on stage and Rosemary's in this gorgeous dress. And then she's got all these dancers. And I'm like, what the fuck kind of place has this much room for this and eating?
Part of me was like, this is a prime example of doing too much for a song.
Yes.
Where all it needed was, she looks great. I love the bedazzled gloves, the
yes.
sparkly gloves.
Yes.
I love the fact that she's not weighed down by jewelry as well. You know, they
100%.
Did a very clean, the jewelry is the gloves.
It was very modest for that kind of
for
entertainment,
kind of
I guess
number,
she was
yeah.
dressing for. Yeah.
So I feel like she just needed one of those, like, what we call old-fashioned microphones, but I think we're microphones of the... You know which ones I'm talking about? Where it's,
yes,
like,
the
all
old...
metal with, like, the... Yeah. That's all we needed. And maybe, like, camera work. You know, make rotate around her or something.
Because if she was, like, caressing her sparkly glove on that and keeping... I mean, that would have been... That would have made that scene 100% better to me. I think the dancers were tacky.
Yeah, because there's a moment where they go away. They, like, go below
yeah.
the camera line.
And
I'm
the
like,
camera's
oh,
just on her. And I'm like,
oh,
this is perfect.
Is it.
Yeah.
And, like, she doesn't need to move around either. She does, and she does in the number. But, like, she doesn't have to. This is a...
And think of it this way. That song was great without dancers. And Sisters was very, very minimal choreography. Fantastic song.
Yeah. And,
you
like...
You don't have to do much.
I like the second Sisters because it's them dicking around having fun. But the first one, I feel like it's just so, like, you know, you and your best Judy, not to play off the name of the Vera Ellen's character. But, like, it doesn't have to be your biological sister. It could be, I tried to get to do it with one of my friends at a summer stock job. We did a staff talent show and I was like, we should totally do this number. We never did, but if he's listening, I still want to do it one day with you whenever we get together.
That'll be my Halloween costume next year now that I think, or this year now that I think about it.
Have you seen, there's been pictures circulating the social medias about the costumes are in some sort of museum. And if you look at them now, like, it is so washed out. It looks almost like white, these costumes.
Oh, that's,
which is,
well,
but it's fascinating because when I first saw it, I was like, but I remember it being blue. But am I having the dress moment? You know,
are you saying this is gold and white?
Are you saying this is gold and white and not blue and black? Like, what's going on? Like, no, but it's just because obviously it's been almost 70 years. It's been
and
70
lights have
years.
Been burning
shit.
It up in display.
Yes, and it's probably faded over time in whatever storage it's been in, but it still looks fabulous.
And speaking of this film being 1954 and old, there's that moment where sisters are talking and Judy's like, oh, you know, mother must have wrote to brother and he wrote to Wallace and Davis, and Betty's just like, he's out of the country, he's been Alaska all month. And all of a sudden, like, when I heard that, I was like, out of the country? What? And then it just, like, history had to come back to me. And I'm like, oh, my God, Alaska didn't become a state until 1959.
Yeah. Like,
this is
yeah.
a 54 film. Holy shit.
Hawaii is not even a state yet, I think.
Mm-mm. We only had 48 back then.
Whoa.
Wow.
Wow.
Wowzers.
Speaking of the beginning, the sheriff, you know, that whole thing.
That whole bit still confuses me. It almost seemed like they're like, we have to figure out a way to make this work.
We have to get them to Vermont.
So how do we do this? And it seems like these grown-ass adults that have literally ran, I don't know, a platoon in war is suddenly like, we're gonna push you out a window in a cab, take our tickets, and and then we're gonna dance.
Well, that's another question I have. How old are these people supposed to be? What are their ages?
Well, that's where I'm confused about, because there's a the general is obviously supposed to be a lot older than Bing Crosby, when in real life the general was actually younger by a few months than Bing Crosby.
Oh yeah, there's that scene where the two of them are on the bench and he's reading the letter. I'm like, you two are the same age.
Yeah, like, you two are like practically right in the womb together. Like, shut up.
Because Bing Crosby, there's also a moment where Bing Crosby's talking to Danny Kaye and he's like, I want to settle down with a nice girl or whatever he says. And I'm like, girl? You want to settle with a girl?
Danny.
No, Bing.
Oh, Bing. That. Okay. Because I was about to be like, Danny screams.
Danny, I would say, is probably like 30s. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know Bing right. I know Bing is in his 50s at this point.
Was he, or was he like in his 40s?
Well, actually, I lied, because Danny Kaye was born in 1911, so he was in his 40s at this point.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby, hold on. IMDb will tell me.
1870.
Kind of close.
God. I'm not that far off.
Well, you're 30 years off. 1903.
Wow.
So he was in his 50s when he made this movie. And then Rosemary Clooney, I believe, was in her 30s.
Rosemary was 33, and I know, yes, Betty was like 26. Well, sorry, Vera Ellen was 33, and Rosemary Clooney was 26.
You are incorrect, because...
Am I?
Vera Ellen was born in 21, and Rosemary Clooney was born in 28, so she's the youngest. She is the youngest, but I think she's playing the older sister.
Yeah.
Because
that's the fact I knew, was that Rosemary in real life is younger, but in the movie, she's the older sister.
Yeah, and I know I said it in the first chance that she's 20 years younger than Bing Crosby.
Good Lord.
Give her, well, almost 30 years younger than Bing Crosby.
That explains why Rosemary idolized Crosby so much, because she wanted to, she was ecstatic to be in that film with him.
I feel like, though, they probably cast her as the older sister because she does hold herself to look older.
And she has an alto voice, too.
Yes. And
that lower voice will do it.
And Vera Ellen is a dancer, so she's got the skinny, muscular body of a dancer, so she looks a little younger.
And it's so funny when you know that fact, that Rosemary Clooney was a singer, and so you can see that she has very strong songs in the film, when Vera Ellen was dubbed over by, what was her name? Trudy Stevens, I think. That sounds right, but that was the voice who actually did Vera Ellen's songs, because Vera Ellen wasn't a singer.
Yeah. No, yeah. I know. And then there's a whole thing as well where on the soundtrack, they couldn't have Rosemary Clooney on the soundtrack because she was
she's with Columbia.
I didn't know. I don't know which one's which, but like, I know she was contracted under a different one than what produced this. So like,
that's right.
She did her own album at some point. I think she did Sisters with her sister.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. Yep, Trudy Stevens did the dubbing for Vera Ellen, at least for in Sisters and Snow. And I believe that's it, because she doesn't really sing in Mandy.
Mm-mm.
Because she dances and she doesn't sing in Choreography. Yeah. So in the two songs that she kind of sings, there's three. Gee, I Wish I Was Back in the Army.
I was going to say that one, I assumed she also did, but...
Trudy also did that one. You were correct.
I like that fact, just because you don't really notice in the film that that happens. But you definitely notice that Vera is the... Vera Ellen, I keep wanting to just shorten it, is the dancer and Rosemary's not, because all of the dancing scenes, Vera Ellen is like being tossed around and doing these gorgeous moves. And Rosemary's like... Tick tick. It's so simple.
When they're in when they do the best things happen while you're dancing, I did write down that Danny Kaye throws her around like a doll.
Oh my
Throws Vera
God, yes,
Ellen
he
down.
does.
And then they do the zip line out of nowhere. But
That whole scene is probably my least favorite just because I'm like, where are they?
the Florida Club
Yeah, the
makes
Florida Club.
sense, right?
And it's outside. That's my favorite part is there's no wall, there's no ceiling. You just sit outside with Florida weather apparently is perfect.
On the patio, and like nobody's out there besides the two of them, and it's
This
a
is
packed club.
pre-climate change.
Pre-climate change, pre-COVID,
Pre-COVID.
pre-everything.
And yeah, they're like dancing on, what was that? A boat dock or something. And
No idea, but I love it. I love, he's the dancer too. I mean, he's a mover, but out of him and Bing Crosby,
For sure,
he's
yeah.
the dancer. There was a moment, I was rewatching it literally before we started recording, and there's a moment in Gee, I Wish I Was Back in the Army, where Rosemary Clooney, when she comes out to do the choreography, she looks so angry. And I'm like, is it because you're doing choreography, or are you in character and you still kind of hate Bing Crosby's character? What's going on here? But she's coming out and she's giving like angry face, but I think it's the actress is angry at
Oh,
something.
I think yeah, she's supposed to be putting off that very manly military march because
March,
she's
but
marching out, but she does look really mad.
I'm like, what happened? Who stepped on your toes this day? Are you mad that you're doing choreography? Like,
Somebody behind stage was like, "That probably makes her that uniform makes you look fat," right as she's about to walk out, and
you're
she's like.
grump, 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 grump.
Listen, Rosemary, if anybody ever tells you that again, shoot them because that's not true. You look gorge.
You take off the rhinestone glove and you bitch slap them with your ring hand.
Oh, yeah. Use those rhinestones in your favor.
No, you don't use the rhinestones in your favor because we're saving them for a good day. But
Oh,
if somebody calls you fat, you bitch
sure.
slap them with your ring hand, you know, whatever
And
rings you have on.
then Vera Ellen comes up behind you and high kicks them.
In her
Okay.
tap shoes.
In her tap shoes, 100%.
Well, not really, because they don't, in this time period, they don't really
Oh,
capture tap sounds.
well. Not, also, if you're listening to the song choreography, tappers aren't tapping it anymore. They're doing choreography, so she won't have her tap shoes.
She's clearly not wearing tap shoes in that number. I mean,
No, absolutely not.
in this time period, like, I've done a bunch of Gene Kelly and other movies where there's a bunch of tap in it, and like you look at the soles of their feet because there's inevitably a shot of them kicking and you can see the bottom of their shoe, and there is zero metal on there. So you're like, where is the sound coming from?
Yeah.
Especially in choreography when she's,
She's doing
doing the toe,
Yeah.
and you're like, first of all, how is that possible? I feel like she can do that in real life. So how is that physically
Exactly.
possible? But
Well,
then,
and you know that everyone watching that was like, oh my God, that's so amazing. When in like modern day film, I'm like, no, she's not doing that at all. That's not tap shoes.
I mean, the fact that I think it's still it is amazing because
As
I,
fast as her foot is moving.
yes, and like her
Yes.
foot is touching the ground. That is the control is what I'm impressed with.
100%. Yeah.
And I'm sure if we were at this time to give her tap shoes to do it live, she could do it.
Easily without problem. I
I
think
just
it's
don't.
just my brain's like focusing on how the tap is going and the sound and watching her foot, and I'm like, they're just not matched.
Oh yeah,
Even as
no.
fast as you're moving, they're just not matched.
No, they're not at all. So I've seen this movie so many times at this point. I lost count after seven, which was, when I was 4 years old. And I never really thought about it. There's a moment in the beginning during the war when after Davis saves Wallace, and they're in Danny Kaye Davis is in the sling and everything, and then he brings his hand out of the sling and shakes Bing Crosby's hand. I'm like, has he been faking the whole time? Is that what they're saying, that like
I
he's
feel
faking the
like
injury?
That's that typical 1950s humor where it's just like, oh, and I can't tell if it's he's faking it or if he was just so excited that he was like, whatever.
Adrenaline.
Adrenaline, like it made my arm really strong. But I
but
feel
then,
like that's that typical era's humor.
But then he uses it for
the whole movie.
The whole movie. And there's that montage of Heat Wave, Let Me Sing, and I'm Happy in Blue Skies, where they go through two-ish years, who knows how many, after the war. Because that's also like when the papers come out and they say it's VE Day and all this, but they're also making a name for themselves as Wallace and Davis.
Yeah.
I'm like, is he still faking it after all this time?
That actually is one of my points in the whole film. You watch him whenever he wants to do something. He's always like, and I'm just like, oh, okay.
I mean, that's a lie you take to your grave, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't gaslight someone into, or manipulate people into doing whatever you want all the time.
And then all of a sudden, you're like, one day, you're like, I'm actually fine, and I've been lying this whole time, because that'll implode the friendship.
Apparently, when you lie that long to get your way, it will. I haven't tried it, so I don't know.
Oh! As you do an evil laugh afterwards. I know we've been talking a lot about the music, because that's basically all what this is. But,
you know,
like,
well, yeah.
Story-wise, it seems pretty standard where, like you said earlier, they're answering the questions of like, how do we get them here? How does this happen? Once we're out of the opening and we're in the Florida Club, it's like, okay, how do we get them on the train? Because obviously we're going to do a song there. And then how do we get them to Vermont? Because that's where the general is. And how do we get people butts in seats to save the general's business?
It is almost like they're like, all right, so we're going to make these two duos, performer duos. They're going to meet. They're going to fall in love immediately and dance. Next, they'll be on a train. Next, they'll be here. And then, like, afterwards, whenever they're done with the meeting and they're like, yes, done. They're like, so how are we going to transition from this scene to this scene to this scene?
Music and, numbers.
And somebody, like, pulls out a cigar and he goes, I don't know. Somebody burnt a hole in the carpet and doesn't want to pay the fee.
And then somebody else is in this meeting is like, I've got all Irving Berlin songs. You want them?
Hell yeah.
you want to use them? You need them?
100%. Yeah. And then they're like, all right, how are we going to make this show? Oh, and then at the end, they're like, okay, so it's called Christmas. There's Christmas in the name. We should probably make it a Christmas film. How do we make it end? A Christmas tree, and they're in Santa outfits.
Oh, snowing!
And suddenly it snows, and magic happens.
So, Ciara Ryan was also in another episode where called Summer Stock. It was a Gene Kelly, Judy Garland movie. And it is the same exact set as this. And that's another thing I cannot unsee, like the watermelon costumes. Because,
oh, man.
Literally, I mean, if you see that movie, Summer Stock, A, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good movie. Because there's Judy and then there's Gene Tapping. So we got it. But it's the same set. It's literally, they use the barn. They have the inn. The inn is the same set. The barn is different because I don't remember there being that.
A massive fucking stage.
A massive fucking stage.
with the entire setup to do this grandiose show. Are you saying they didn't have that in the barn?
No, which I'm finding it's really funny in movies, specifically musical movies, because obviously that's what I do on here, where like they're doing something on a stage right? Like they're saying we're on a stage, we're dancing on a stage, but the stage is however big it needs to be for that number.
Yeah.
Like the movie version of Kiss Me Kate is the worst, where they're like, it's now like three sound stages large, and now and but in the next scene it's like a literal Broadway stage.
I mean, the
And
rehearsal of Mandy and all that shit. I'm like watching the camera swing around, and it's just this massive stage. And then all of a sudden they back up, and I'm like, this is a barn! It's a barn!
it with them going to the pit to work through the song, man, at the key at the
Yeah.
piano, and I'm like, where the fuck was this?
Listen, I grew up on a ranch. We had big ass barns. Nothing with a stage like that and a pit. Maybe the 1950s were a weird time that I don't understand, but Jesus.
It's an inn. Maybe that they rent.
That's
Well,
true.
he does say that he renovated. They do say that they renovated, and that's why he's the general's inn needs some money.
Well, I
Or in
renovated and put on a professional sound stage so that way, in case
it.
Wallace and Davis shows up to do a free show in my honor. But that would be embarrassing.
It's the toxic masculinity and the fragile male ego like together again.
And that's what every film in the 50s is, some sort of racism and some sort of toxic masculinity and some sort of demoralizing women, because they're always like, hey, you need to cool down, miss. You're getting all worked up. Go eat yourself a liverwurst and buttermilk sandwich or whatever it was.
That you're gonna make for yourself and for me, because that's what we do in this time
We need to
period.
get married so you can make this for me and I can have wonderful dreams, because then he goes through his whole spiel about dreams and
Oh my God,
sandwiches.
I did write down as well, like, why does the answer to every classic Hollywood film have to be someone is in love? It's when Rosemary Clooney and Bing Crosby are fighting, and then Vera Ellen is like, she's in love. And I went, you fucking moron.
I also love how mad Wallace, David Wall or David Wallace's, sorry, that is that
That
is The
that's a
Office.
Bob Wallace.
Bob Wallace, thank you. It's getting late for me. I'm old. But Bob Wallace, I love how mad he is every time he's like, you did what? You gave away our tickets to pretty ladies. And then they walk in, he's like, sit down here. Let's have a drink in the club car. Like, his mood changes the moment they walk in, but he's always like angry.
It's a weird thing, because like Danny Kaye and Vera Ellen, it seems like they are, well, they're supposed to be the ingenues. They're the younger of the two.
We're gonna change these old fogies.
They're like weirdly in a rom-com while Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney are not at some
Yeah.
points.
Yeah. It's. Wow, that is a combination of a rom-com with a drama, dramedy. It's weird
Yeah.
because it's like two couples are in completely different films, but they're working, well, one's working to change the other film.
Because like
Oh, God, it's such a confusing movie.
when they sing Count Your Ble when he sings Count Your Blessings, I feel like that's an honest romance moment. Whereas
It
Danny
is a good
Kaye
moment.
and Vera Ellen are fabricating moments for the two of them.
To try and get them to fall in love. And I think that's the point in the film where their plan actually played out and the two really started to really fall for each other. And it was pretty sweet. And then of course you gotta throw in some trouble there. And the next day she's walking around. She's like, I'm in love. And then the house, what is
Emma.
she considered again? What's Emma's title supposed to be? I
I have
forgot what
no
she calls
idea.
herself. I just
She's
call
a
her every time
she calls herself a
I
busybody, and that's all,
that's yeah, that's it. I call her a busybody because that's what she says she does well.
and she never
I
apologizes. Never.
never. I use steam. Sorry. I just always think about her little quirks. But yeah, and then all of a sudden she comes in, tells her some cock-a-doodle story that she overheard a clip of, made up this whole grand story from it, and I'm like, wow. That's really good. Like, you are creative.
Maybe she's an author. She's a writer.
Well, if she's not, she should be now.
She's Anthony, an unpublished writer.
She's got books laying there ready to be published.
I'm sorry, Anthony, if you're listening to this episode. I didn't mean to read you like that, but come on.
I'm not. I'll trash you on the pod during recording tomorrow.
and then a month later, everyone else will listen to this episode and it'll make sense.
And everyone will be like, what?
Is there anything else you want to talk about, though, before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I actually learned something today that I didn't know about. Apparently, this was the highest grossing film of 1954.
That makes sense.
And it was $12 million by the end of its theatrical run, which I did the inflation count, and that's $137 million today.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I did not know it was that big.
In its initial run.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, because I'm seeing a box office, but it's from December 9th, 2018. So I'm like, that's right.
I should say initial run.
Yeah. That's good, because this movie is, like you keep saying, it is the post-war. It is, yes, there's problems in it. It's problematic. But it's a pretty solid movie. If you can take out those problematic moments, which is just that one section.
Take out the whole racist scene, including the part where we're being old people bitching about how things are starting to change and we don't like to see that. So then they sing this whole song about choreography. That's all it is to me, is old people going, I don't like that things are changing. Arrgh. So I'm going to mock them.
Yeah, but we need the tap. I want the tap.
Yeah, I'm actually fine, because Mandy is one of my favorite songs, not because I really like it. It just gets stuck in your head so easily.
Mandy. Da, 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 da,
Mandy. Yeah. I hate it because it gets stuck in my head, but I can't help it.
Like I say, if you take out I'd Rather See a Minstrel Show, Mr. Bones, and Mandy.
Ugh. That stupid Bones
maybe
joke.
maybe not Mandy, because I think Mandy as a song
fantastic
is fine. I don't, because Mr. Bones and I'd Rather See a Minstrel Show are clearly about minstrel
awful.
Shows.
They're awful.
Yeah, I don't know if Mandy is. So
if it is, that would be news to me.
Right. But if you take out the other two, change the costumes around, because that designer literally doubled down by putting the black.
He had some mood to let out.
Yeah, on the women's outfits. If you change that, honestly, just make it red and green because it's Christmas. That's all you need to do. Make it red
different,
and green.
Yeah, different costumes. Cut out a couple songs. Leave the choreography the same. I don't care.
Yeah, it's still a pretty solid number. A solid show, movie, whatever I'm calling it.
Agreed, yes.
So, I understand why in 1954 it made so much money.
So much, yeah. I do, too. It's just, I guess it shocked me because it's old, so you just don't think about that kind of stuff. So whenever I read the inflation amount, I was like, oh, whoa.
And also, this is, historically, this is when we're out of the Depression, because World War II happened and ironically helped us.
Yeah.
Financially.
This was that nostalgic industrial growth that just.
So then boom. It also happened in film where things were getting bigger and they were using, the fact that this is in color too shows you how much money they had.
Mm-hmm.
People were using black and white because it's cheaper, not because it's the only thing we had. Because I think by this point, color films were happening for 20 years.
I think this was the first film in, what was it, VistaVision or something like that? They really hyped that up.
Because what? Wizard of Oz was 39, I want to say. 38, 39.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Snow White was also right around the corner of that. And I know those aren't the first two color movies, but those are the two prominent in color movies that, you know, a lot of film historians like to use as the time frame. Right. But because now we're out of the Depression and World War II and all that, they can use color films. And as much as we made fun of the sets, they are huge set pieces.
Huge, huge.
With a lot of people.
Yes.
So they had money to spend, and I'm glad that they made their money back.
They did. They did very well.
But okay, let's get into Strap and Flash, shall we?
Hell yeah.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. And because this is the second chance of it, we're going to see if John agrees with his former sharps and flats. Jay, the floor is
Yes.
yours. What do you, well, go. Start with
I have a
whatever.
few, and I'm going to start with my top favorite, which is, in general, Rosemary Clooney. Anything she sings, anytime her face and that perfectly structured hair shows up on screen, I love her so much. Gorgeous voice. She made that movie for me.
She's so statuesque in this.
She is. Like, I want to be her whenever I'm listening to her sing because I'm like, oh, this feels so good to listen to. So that was one of my like hardcore sharps. My next one was the film just has a lot of catchy songs. It's easy for several of them to get stuck in your head. I'll get Mandy, Gee, I Wish I Was Back in the Army, Count Your
Sisters.
Blessings, Sisters, Love, You Didn't Do Me Well, right? That. All of them. They'll just all have a moment where they're stuck and
Hell,
they won't go away.
White Christmas, because they use that, they play that all the fucking time.
All the time.
At Christmas. But
And
it's, I don't think they use the film's version.
no.
Because I believe like Bing Crosby recorded his own and they use other versions. And again, like I said, they couldn't use the, I don't think they could use the film version because of our diva.
If I recall right, you can't find an album of this movie because they all just kind of recorded their own separate albums. So when you watch this movie, that's the only time you can actually hear Rosemary, Bing Crosby, and all of them singing together.
So, but like the fact that White Christmas is now, as a song, is a staple in December or November, depending on when radios or when people start playing their holiday music.
September, whatever.
Yeah, September. Yeah, that one is also an
Even
earworm.
the part of the film that I don't care that much about, which, well, to the second don't care that much about, I mean, the best things happen while you're dancing. There's moments where I'll be like, the best things happen while you're
While you're
dancing. And
dancing.
I'll just kind of be like, I don't know, in the shower. And I'm like,
And then you get out of your shower and your zip line, right?
Yes, that's the only
Well,
way I ever get out of my shower if I'm singing songs from this film.
other sharps do you have?
I do love the post-war storyline of the general. I really appreciate that. It's kind of something I do appreciate. And then I've got two more, and it's the part where Emma, after the general says, "I got along very well in the army without you," her line is, "It took 15,000 men to take my place, and I don't know why." I love that so much. Like, I'm just like, ugh, the best comeback ever. I love you for that.
Is it a gay joke? Maybe that's why.
Maybe I'm gonna find the gay in it.
We did.
I took
Hey yo.
15,000 men when you were in the army. I'm kidding.
Please use that in your next episode for Beards and Sundries.
I'm gonna figure out how to squeeze them all in.
Please figure out how to use that. And then hopefully, and then you can be like, wait until March, everyone, to hear why. Ooh.
The joke will make sense in a month.
Okay,
My last sharp,
yeah.
Vera Ellen's waist.
Yeah.
That thing is cinched in. Like, it is tiny at one point. I'm like, how?
She had a really tiny waist, and you heard the rumors that she wore a lot of turtleneck or high neck things because of her anorexia. That's not true. She had they, that was just the design.
Oh,
Or
okay.
yeah, she didn't have anything. And I remember even seeing her talk about it, where she's like, My neck is fine.
Yeah.
Yes, I was anorexic, but my neck is fine.
Well, I feel like you could see in her face if she was going through anorexia.
I think she was, but like also she had a healthy dancer's body.
Okay, so it wasn't as okay.
So it was weird. But
Okay, huh, interesting.
I think don't quote me on that. I
I'm
won't quote
quoting you
myself on
tomorrow,
it.
actually.
Damn it.
It's going on all my socials for the pod.
Damn it. Okay, what are your flats then? Do you have any?
I get very bored with the trope of the 1950s communication problems, and so I'm like, this show is what led our parents to raise us with generational trauma because they just weren't communicated with. So that was my flat.
Oh my God, okay.
I know this is the shtick that he has. I think at a lot of points, Danny Kaye's character is too much for me. I think he overplays parts so much that I'm like, just calm it down, just a smidge, and I'll still love it. And then me being this guy, the barn doors that they open at the end to show everyone it's snowing. Hello, it's cold out. You're letting out all the heat.
That's cute. You think there's heat in there?
That's true. Well, look at all those bodies. That had to be hot in there. They were probably sweating their asses off.
True. Oh yeah, true. But they're also in a barn. So like
Again, a barn
a barn, and
with the
you
state.
with an ever-changing dimensional stage.
Oh my God. Apparently, the right camera lens will get you a full-blown sound stage. And then when you turn it, it's just a dinky little stage, you see.
Like, there's that moment when they all come up when they because this is a show that they want to put on, right? Is that the idea of this one? I don't, there's they start to melt together, these episodes and
I get it.
movies. But like there's a moment where it's very crowded with all of their shit. And I was like, it's never this crowded again.
It's like they put it in the most, I don't know, whoever works there built the game Tetris.
Yeah, because the I'm thinking I can't remember when exactly this is, but there's like the ensemble-y people are having dance rehearsal in one area, and then there's a bunch of like trunks with their costumes and props and set pieces and everything that you go by, and then there's voice is this when Vera Ellen is in that yellow number and does is it the Abraham number that they're dancing to? I can't remember. But I'm like,
I think so.
there is so much space and yet not enough space in this one moment.
It is amazing.
Make up your mind.
Yeah. And then there's that one like lead choreographer or whatever that you can always tell his suit's like a little different shade of green and all that stuff. And he's always walking around and he's like, everyone, you're gonna get to your places and blah blah blah, and we're gonna meet for snacks and I don't know. Shit at 3. Get ready now. And that's like his part's so bland, and he's just like walking around all suave.
Queer coded.
Yes. God.
Do you have any other sharps? Any other flats?
The last one I had was the subtle blatant racism.
Well, good, because I agree with my former ones. Yes, but I wanna amend some things. Like I did say the costume design, but like not that one number.
Costumes were great, except in that
Except in that one part.
one part.
And I know I sharped Mary Wicks, but I have new flats, and I'm flatting Emma's snooping because again, we talked about
My God.
I get it. They had to figure out how to get Rosemary out
It was that
because it
transition
was
that
conflict.
somebody in the writing room with a cigar was like, we got to figure out what's going to happen here because we got the rest of the film built.
Mary Welch is snooping.
She uses steam. She listens in at the wrong time.
Yeah,
That's what women do.
and then my other flat. I don't know if I really punched this the last time, but the menstrual sequence is racism and all that. Like we could do without that.
Yeah, I mean we could skip that.
Have you seen Holiday Inn?
Oh yeah, it's been a long time though.
Yeah, so like that one. Bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But that bad.
And that's where White Christmas the song is first in.
Right.
So from that one to this one, they were like, okay, we learned, kind of. So
what do we do to make this better?
But I have new sharps. I'm surprised I didn't sharp this the last time. For whatever reason, I always loved the civilian costumes in Gee, I Wish I Was Back in the Army. At the end, when they come up.
When the little board comes up and their little heads are over them. It's pretty creative.
I'm sharpening it now because I'm like, that is so smart. And it's like cutesy and funny. And like, yeah, I'm understanding the sentiments because like, it's kind of what the general's going through where it's like, okay, I'm back to civilian life, but I wish I was back in the army.
I'm not doing as much as I was in the war. So now I'm getting a little bit frumpier because they drew them all bigger.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hinting at that life change for them.
But I'm just sharpening that theatrical moment where it pops up.
So creative.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, they did great.
I also want to sharp. So again, I've seen this movie so many times. I'm sharpening this one little detail that I just noticed this time around. In the beginning, when the general goes to the camp, he is using a crooked stick as a cane. And I was like, that is so genius because that is showing you like how bad it was that like they had to find something for him to use because he has a bum leg. Or something, or whatever the issue was.
Oh yeah,
it is literally a tree branch that he's using as
or he probably just didn't say anything because that's what men did back then. We're not gonna bring up our problems. We'll just find a stick and use that to walk with.
But like he didn't have like an actual cane because we're in wartime, so we had to figure it out. So yeah. I'm like, that's a cool detail that I'd like to explore a little bit, like, you know, let's go to that board meeting that, you know, not the one that, you know, that you were talking about where they're trying to figure out the transitions, but I want to go to the, I want to go to the board meeting when they're figuring out the details of things.
I want to go to the board meeting where they're like, all right, we're putting him out in a field. He's got a bum leg and he's going to carry this crooked tree branch. Now he's going to walk up to a set with a stage, a backdrop, a piano, multiple instruments.
Does it feel like to you that the opening is just basically the reverse of the barn set? The outside?
No.
Like I feel like they moved aside the facade of the inn and the barn, and then they just put up that rickety stage and some debris and they called it good.
And then a 50-foot drop came down. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I'm also sharpening tap. I didn't sharp this last time, and I'm very upset with myself. I love tap dancing. It is amazing. I know that they're not actually tap dancing, but, like, they are doing the movement, so.
I appreciate a good dance or a tap show, so I can sharp that along with you. I get it.
I'm a sucker for tap. I don't know why. I think it's because it's the added sound to the movement. Not only are they doing big choreographic, you know, things, but now we're adding sound. So it's sight and sound.
And definitely when you've got multiple people tap dancing and you are watching them move perfectly in sync and you can hear it, it's just like, okay, you guys have worked hard on this.
Don't get me started on the opening of 42nd Street. I love it. I fucking love it. I fucking love it. I also want to sharp when Danny Kaye's socks matches his shoes and pants because it's so great. That's another one in the detail meeting where they're like, we're doing a musical. We have to match his socks to shoes and pants. Go!
Oh my gosh, yes.
It's the same. Literally, the pants, socks, and shoes are the same color gray in the Florida club. And I was like, that's fucking brilliant.
I don't even think I've ever really paid attention to that, but I do vaguely remember one time being like, oh.
I feel like in Mandy or in the minstrel number, like they have, it's the same thing where they're wearing the green pants and the green shoes and they have green socks. So like they're doing a very musical theater thing and I'm here for it.
Yep. 100%.
I also, to continue on with a costume sharp, I'm sharpening the bedazzled gloves. Rhinestone gloves, I should say. Like, bitch. And then my last sharp, I don't know why I'm sharpening this, but I'm sharpening the best things happen while you're dancing, the version for the party. I think it's the same that they use in the Florida club.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the same. Like when
I think it's just
the
a scene
singers.
I like better.
But I like it because it seems a little more, because the way that they staged it, it's more like a jam session. You know, it's
maybe
like,
that's why I still like that song, because maybe I'm hearing it more. I'm just picturing the dancing scene because I don't care as much about that. But I do love that scene because you're just kind of showing the party and everyone's singing along.
Yeah, like there's four people right by a piano and the rest of the instruments that are playing. And it feels like a true theater party.
I completely forgot about this flat I really wanted to bring up.
Okay.
Every time the general wants to get involved in anything, why is he so weird? He's like, you guys should kiss. And then they peck and he's like, you can do better than that. And like he watches them like really kiss and he's just staring at them. I'm like, can you just like be a little bit more normal about this?
Because he has a weird paternal figure vibes to him.
Yes, he's trying to do that, but it comes off so creepy for me.
and rewatching this, I was just like, I feel like he is related to the Haynes sisters somehow.
Yeah.
But I know he's not.
Right. Well, he has another awkward part with Betty's character because he's like, oh, when she's at the train station, he's like, I can't help but think this is a tactical error. And I'm like, okay, listen, military guy.
But like, because I'm like, how did he hire them? How did they get that gig? And it only makes sense if like they're related.
Or he
not.
Knew someone. I mean, technically, I guess he knew their little brother.
He knew the brother. You're right.
So that would help.
Who's in another country? Alaska.
Yeah, who's in way out of states. He's out of a different country right now, and it's Alaska.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
100% Love You Didn't Do Me Right. Or no, Love You Didn't Do Right By Me. That's what it is.
Love You Didn't Do Right By Me, yeah.
Only because it's a gorgeous song, and I love Rosemary Clooney, and so that, and plus, like, technically I could relate it to my life in the past, but it's all my fault, so I should not blame that. But second of all, Count Your Blessings actually sticks in my head a lot, and I appreciate it because, you know, like, I've been through health problems in my life, so I'm like, I really do kind of just like this song for its message.
It's nice.
And then lastly, I Wish I Was Back in the Army, and Mandy, just because they're always stuck in my brain when the movie plays.
Yeah. Last time I said the Old Man Sisters, Gee, I Wish Back in the Army, and White Christmas, I think I'm going to get rid of the old man. I don't think I want
We'll
that.
Follow the old man wherever he
wants to go.
Because we love him. Like, it was very nice.
Yeah, I don't think I want to do that, but I think I want to add Love You Didn't Do Right By Me.
How could you not?
Because I didn't last time, so I'm going to do it now.
That's your own
I'm
fault.
Learning. Hey, second chance, everyone. And I'm going to keep Sisters. I'm going to keep J.O. Wish Back in the Army. I'm going to keep White Christmas. I think I'm going to add Snow. Because that's another earwormy song.
I want to wash my hands, my face, and hair with snow. Actually, I think I sing that in the wrong part. But anyways, yeah, I love that song. I actually didn't like that one for a long time because it almost feel like it. I guess it almost felt like it didn't really have kind of this melody that you're supposed to follow. But then like later on, I'm like, no, I actually really like this song. It's very creative, which if I recall right, it was originally supposed to be called Free for another musical. But they ended up taking it for this and changing it to Snow. It wasn't at all about Snow before.
Sounds right. I mean, the way that they did shit back in this day, like things bouncing around, you know, the fact that The Wizard of Oz is the little movie that shouldn't have been made and still got made somehow, like that's mind boggling when you hear about all the stories.
Yeah. And turned into what historic piece it is today. So.
Yeah, because like you hear about some issues with movies these days about actors dropping out of things or controversies happening, but like back in 30s, 40s, 50s time, like they were cranking the shit out, and you had like I think they were unions, but they were just like
union.
Yeah,
we're not here. Not like today where, you know, there was the strike that happened for what, 6 months, something like that. In total?
Sounds right.
It was a long strike, but oh my god, like yeah. So with the amount of turnaround with things, I'm not surprised that like they pulled a song.
Oh,
they pulled
yeah.
One song and changed. Irving Berlin just went cross, new lyrics, go. Regurgitate it.
He's got a cigar or a line of cocaine, one of those. He's just like Snow.
Snow.
She's going to wash her hands, her hair, and her face with it. Go!
Go! And then, meanwhile, the director, Michael Curtis, Michael Curtis is like, you're going to create a mountainscape with napkins and shit.
Little bits of pieces off of this greenery on the table, and you're going to make something strange that the camera's going to zoom in on.
Yes, we're going to make a diorama.
Here's a blue napkin. It's the sky.
Oh, my God. And on that note, Jay, we're done with the episode. We did it.
Already?
Yeah. We did the second chance of White Christmas. Hooray!
Well, I hope our second chance really made people go back and watch it and be like, wow, I love this movie, besides, you know, like the racism.
And the conservative
side, the toxic masculinity, and maybe the womanizing and things like that. But besides, wonderful songs.
Wonderful songs by Irving Berlin. What do you have to plug or promote?
Oh, God, what do I have? I don't know. Oh, a podcast.
What? You have a podcast?
I have a podcast, and it's called Beards and Sundries. And me, the most wonderful host on it, with my two friends that are another host, too.
they're there. They just show up.
They exist. No, they're awesome. I love working with them. We do a weekly show that comes out every Sunday. It's just a bunch of bullshitting, and it's a lot of fun. We give you fake commercials every week. We give you a game. We give you something to check out, user content. So come be our friend and listen to the show or watch it. It's on YouTube.
I love it. I love the podcast. I was on it a couple of times. I'm still waiting to come back, but I love it.
We talk about this guest life, but it's so complicated whenever we're like working all these jobs. I'm like, how do people guest all the time?
I make it work.
I know. I'm amazed.
I show up everywhere. But you're honestly, your podcast is one of the two I really listen to, and it's great to know when Sunday is.
Yeah,
because all of a sudden I open up Apple Podcasts and it's like new episode, and I go, oh, it's Sunday.
Yeah, and this week it just popped up with, because we're recording a day after our episode released, and it's like gay science.
So now people know when we've recorded this episode.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Look back at our show and you'll find out how long it's been.
And if you, I don't know, if you were in a production of this stage version of this with like how Sierra was in the first chance, and we talked about it. I'd love to hear about your experience. How much tapping did you do in it? Tell me. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. I don't have another. What is your song from this movie? Like, I mean, we've talked a lot and we have our playlist, but what is your playlist from this movie, dear listener? And if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, we're continuing, obviously, because it's Second Chance Month, everybody. And we're doing the second chance of the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode, The Night Man Cometh. It's a wild show.
Yes, it is.
Jay, thank you so much for coming back on. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. It's always a lot of fun.
And I tried getting the other two on. We did it once. That's it.
Yeah. Well, musicals aren't also something that they jump on board and go, I have to watch this musical. So I understand.
We have to have you come back at some point with another.
Oh, as much as I've watched musicals, I'm sure we'll find another one. Just point one out and I'm sure I'll talk about it.
Great. And everybody, thank you for listening. Bye for now.
Bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.